1994.
The American people gave the Republican Party a very strong, clear mandate.
I do think they sent us a message, and I tried to hear it.
But there isn't anything as important as taking care of our children.
We have a small aircraft, single-engine Cessna, which is up against the building.
Shots were fired at the White House.
We will be doing so, Israelis and Jordanians together.
Forgive the anguish we caused each other.
And the West says soft words and empty threats.
Military police are opening up on a building trying to get access. There are people bleeding.
Mr. Simpson is charged alone because he is the sole murderer.
From United Press International, this is 1994, the year in review. I'm Howard Dykus reporting on the UPI Radio Network.
It's a knockout. It was a takedown. It was a slam dunk. It was a tidal wave.
It was the year the opposition overthrew the government in Washington.
It wasn't even close. This was a blowout.
Republicans blew out Democratic majorities in both House and Senate.
This was and is history. Big time.
New York Congressman Bill Paxton was right. Republicans hadn't controlled Congress since the 50s, and it's been even longer than that since they had control while a Democrat was president.
I do think they sent us a message. I tried to hear it.
It would be hard not to hear a message this loud.
Tonight, the people of this state spoke loudly and clearly that they want change.
That's George Pataki, the nearly unknown Republican state lawmaker who ousted New York's nationally known governor, Mario Cuomo.
I've surely made mistakes as governor, but I'm as proud as I can be of what we have accomplished.
How bad was the rout for Democrats? The voters of Spokane, Washington forcibly retired the Speaker of the House. Tom Foley blamed voters not knowing about progress.
As, for example, the deficit is going down. Poll after poll shows the American people believe the deficit is going up.
Wrongly or rightly, voters from both parties turned out Democrats left and right. From Texas Governor Ann Richards, who lost to a son of former President Bush.
I know Texas will join me in thanking Governor Richards for her service to our state.
To the same state's conservative Congressman Jack Brooks, first elected in the 50s, the last time Republicans were in the House majority. GOP National Chairman Haley Barbour.
Although some refer to this as an anti-incumbent year, not a single Republican incumbent in the House, in the Senate, or governor was defeated.
California's Republican Governor Pete Wilson, in big trouble only weeks before, was reelected.
I face longer odds than George Foreman.
Florida's popular Democratic Governor Lawton Chiles, facing another son of Bush, felt lucky to squeak by.
We could have lost this race. Could have lost it easily.
California Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein had to wait for days before learning she won her close one.
And I want to just say, what a cliffhanger.
Iran-Contra figure Oliver North was one Republican who couldn't catch the wave, losing his bid for a Senate seat in Virginia. North said his loss was really a win, altering politics forever.
Every future candidate for office will have to explain to the electorate their vision.
But the biggest exception to the rule came in the Massachusetts Senate race. The Republican son of a former Michigan governor failed to unseat Ted Kennedy, one of the Senate's most liberal members.
We thank him for the battle he has waged, and we're glad about the outcome.
There were interesting election outcomes.
And if God can forgive me, certainly woman can do the same.
The voters of Washington, D.C. made Marion Barry their mayor again.
I'm here and I bear testimony to his amazing grace.
Yes, sir.
Even though he did time after using cocaine on an FBI candid camera.
I will go and fight as hard as I can. With every breath that's in me.
Former pop singer Sonny Bono was elected to Congress from Palm Springs, California.
I won't let you down.
The day after the election, Alabama Senator Dick Shelby switched from Democrat to Republican.
I am changing parties to a party of hope for America.
Tennesseans gave the Senate its first heart surgeon and also elected Fred Thompson, former counsel to the Senate Watergate Committee and an actor playing a sub-skipper in Hunt for Red October. Maine chose a Republican for the Senate seat vacated by retiring Democratic leader George Mitchell.
They've had the luxury of simply being in the opposition
being able to simply say no to things.
Republican Bob Dole, about to switch from minority to majority leader, said, "That's true.
We do have the majority. We have a responsibility to the president, responsibility to the people."
And there was similar sentiment from the election's single biggest winner.
"We had a hard-fought campaign, and we fought back very hard."
Georgia Congressman Newt Gingrich had risen rapidly in the minority leadership. Now he would be Speaker of the House. Gingrich enumerated issues on which he felt he and Bill Clinton agree.
Line item veto, welfare reform. I think those are things that the president feels strongly he'd like to see passed, and we ought to be able to find some bipartisan ways early on.
The president also vowed cooperation.
"I will do everything in my power to reach out to the leaders and the members of this new Congress."
But some Republicans were already looking forward to 1996.
"I'm excited because the American people gave the Republican Party a very strong, clear mandate."
Texas Senator Phil Gramm talks like a rancher, but is really a former economics professor, and incidentally a former Democrat. At year's end, Gramm was seen as a GOP presidential hopeful, and therefore a rival to Bob Dole, who allowed us how he'd thought about the presidency some.
"I've thought about it. Heck, I just think about it a while ago. But I saw Phil Gramm, and it reminded me of it. Yeah."
The Republican victory in November climaxed a tough year for the Clinton administration. The president tried to change the whole way America provides health care for its citizens.
"This is a very important legislative battle."
And he deputized his own wife to spearhead the effort.
"There are many analysts who are analyzing all the different approaches. But there isn't anything as important as taking care of our children."
No one disputed that, but everyone disputed the best way to do it. By summer, Senator Pat Moynihan was openly confirming deadlock.
"There is not now a majority for any health care reform plan."
The whole effort collapsed.
"Employment this January was 1.9 above last January when the president took office."
The jobs picture improved a lot in 1994.
"It's a great time to be Secretary of the Treasury."
But by year's end, Treasury Secretary Lloyd Bentsen felt unappreciated and quit. Agriculture Secretary Mike Espy flew the coop over the issue of free plane rides from a chicken magnet. A stimulating comment about what schools should teach caused Surgeon General Joycelyn Elders to self-destruct. A slow-motion shakeup sent White House aide D.D. Myers packing and shunted Bill Clinton's Republican advisor David Gergen to a foreign policy job even he didn't think he was qualified for.
"Frankly, I don't pretend to be an expert in all of the issues of foreign policy."
Attacks on the administration came from all sides and weren't always confined to words.
"We have a small aircraft, single-engine Cessna, which is up against the building."
A Maryland man turned off the lights on a plane, flew right into restricted airspace past the Washington Monument, and died in a crash on the White House South Lawn.
"This is still under investigation, so we cannot comment one way or another."
A few weeks later, on the north side of the White House,
"At approximately 3 o'clock this afternoon, shots were fired at the White House from the sidewalk on Pennsylvania Avenue.
I heard this noise, which I thought was fireworks. Then I see this guy with the rifle."
"People that were walking on the lawn,
right,
they said all of a sudden they see the dirt starting to blow up and leaves starting to fall down. They didn't know what was going on until somebody realized what was going on inside them. They told them to duck."
"I was upstairs listening to a football game, and the shots were sort of intermittent with the cheers."
"Any idea how he got the rifle up here? Was he disguised in
a..." "I think it was under his raincoat."
In December, more shots were fired at the White House, and this time no one was caught. A few days before Christmas, a homeless man wielding a knife out front of the White House was fatally wounded by a police officer. From UPI, this is the Year in Review. In 1994, NATO faltered. Civil strife stopped in Northern Ireland, and an American invasion was welcomed. In a year so out of kilter, why not start with bagpipes? This was the welcome President Clinton got when he flew to Jordan to watch King Hussein sign a peace treaty with Israel. There were recitations from the Koran and from the Torah as King Hussein and Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin met on the borders of their country to sign the treaty giving them peace for the first time in a generation.
When we come to live next to each other, we will be doing so, Israelis and Jordanians together.
We both must draw on the springs of our great spiritual resources to forgive the anguish we caused each other.
Your Majesty, Mr. Prime Minister, here in the Great Rift Valley, you have bridged the tragic rift that separated your people for too long.
The peace treaty between Israel and Jordan was made possible by Israel's agreement to turn Jericho and Gaza over to Palestinians. In 1994, Yasser Arafat went from being a guerrilla leader to being more or less a head of state in Gaza. UPI's John Furziger.
The PLO leader stayed up most of the night holding a 1 a.m. news conference and munching with comrades on a dinner of watermelon and cheese.
But as the year ended, Arafat's police had big trouble from radicals who thought he had sold out, a problem predicted by President Clinton the day of the Jordanian treaty signing.
The forces of terror will try to hold you back. Already they take deadly aim at the future of peace. In their zeal to kill hope and keep hatred alive.
The year ended with peace in the Middle East, but it was also the year that saw Jewish settler Baruch Goldstein use an assault weapon to open fire on Muslim worshippers as they knelt in prayer at a historic West Bank mosque. 40 dead, 150 wounded, before onlookers beat Goldstein to death. Peace came to Northern Ireland in 1994 when a ceasefire held for days, then weeks, then months. All sides seemed surprised. The 50-year anniversary of D-Day reminded Europeans of how far they had come and should have renewed respect for the Western alliance. But NATO hurt itself in 1994 by failing to stop the genocidal conflict in Bosnia.
In southwestern Sarajevo, an armored car carrying members of ABC News and United Press International were targeted by Bosnian Serb artillery.
Our correspondent was unhurt. A lot of Bosnians weren't so lucky.
200,000 deaths. 2 million ethnic cleansing, and the West says soft words and empty threats.
Former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher summed up the year in Bosnia as a dangerous message.
It will not do. All it does is encourage an aggressor. Everyone can watch now and say the Serbs have got away with aggression.
Kuwait in 1994 sentenced 6 men to death for plotting to assassinate George Bush. Saddam Hussein sent troops toward Kuwait again, but pulled back after President Clinton scrambled troops to the area. North Korea took a page from Iraq's playbook, thumbing its nose at international atomic energy inspectors. Its message to the UN, don't even think about sanctions.
We will interpret the sanction resolution as an act of war against my country.
North Korea relented some after a visit from an independent emissary.
I believe they would all confirm that we had a totally and completely harmonious meeting and that there are no differences of understanding or attitude between us.
Former President Jimmy Carter.
As far as I'm concerned, there are no unanswered questions.
But there was one more North Korean development just a few days later. An anguished message on Radio Pyongyang was translated by UPI's James Kim in Seoul.
North Korea announced that President Kim Il-sung died of a heart attack.
Kim's son took power and promised to abide by the agreement just reached. But North Korea stayed Marxist and militant and near year's end shot down a U.S. helicopter, killing one, wounding another. In Africa,
the shooting took place at a busy roundabout near Mogadishu's main hotel.
U.S. troops were in strife-ridden Somalia as 1994 began, but pulled out after this episode.
It's not yet clear why the American troops opened fire, but some reports speak of a crowd gathering at a food distribution center, possibly blocking the route of an American convoy.
Americans were more welcome in the Caribbean, where they basically invaded the nation of Haiti to ensure that General Raul Cedras finally handed power over to the elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide. There were spots of resistance.
Military police are opening up on a building trying to get access. There are people bleeding.
UPI's Armando Trull on the scene.
U.S. troops are moving into where they believe a gunman is hiding, a gunman who may have killed some people. They are lighting up that building. Dozens of troops going in.
But Aristide was able to return to Haiti and take power, leaving Haitians dancing in the streets, literally singing the praises of Americans for restoring democracy. Haiti was luckier than Mexico. Leading presidential candidate Luis Donaldo Colosio told supporters, "We will work for a better day for Mexico, and no one can stop us." Minutes later, he was assassinated. His campaign manager was elected Mexico's president. This was the sound of refugee housing being built at the U.S. base in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba in 1994, after Fidel Castro hinted at a new boatlift of refugees to Florida. Attorney General Janet Reno said, "Forget it.
These rafters will not come to the United States."
One of the most gruesome stories of 1994 came from the Central African nation of Rwanda, where this BBC correspondent described evidence of genocide floating down the river.
"And the experience has been that every 3 minutes there has been a body going by."
But in South Africa, Nelson Mandela smiled with pleasure as free elections were held with a minimum of violence.
"We show everyone how much we love our country, how much we love our people, how much we love peace."
Those elections made Nelson Mandela the democratically elected president of South Africa. And then there was the case of Michael Fay, a young man caught vandalizing cars in Singapore, where the punishment for that is caning.
"They are a tyrannical, despicable dictatorship that shows absolutely no compassion, and they show absolutely no concern for human dignity."
His lawyer's protests notwithstanding, Michael Fay got his caning. Singapore then booted his butt back to Ohio. This is the Year in Review from United Press International. It was the year a sports and cinema celebrity was charged with murder.
"It was done with deliberation and premeditation. That is precisely what he's charged with, because that is what we will prove."
O.J. Simpson, quarterback, TV announcer, actor, was accused of brutally stabbing his ex-wife and her friend, then calmly flying to Chicago on business.
"At this time, do you wish to enter a plea guilty or not guilty?"
"Not guilty."
Police records of past domestic incidents and prosecutors' desire to use DNA test results as evidence made it look bad for O.J. as the year ended.
"Mr. Simpson is charged alone because he is the sole murderer."
But, as his attorney said,
"I would ask you to reserve judgment until all the evidence is presented in a court of law."
The murder of Nicole Simpson and her friend was only one of several lurid court cases in 1994.
"In the case of Commonwealth of Virginia versus Lorena Lenore Bobbitt."
Battered wife Lorena Bobbitt, who gave her husband a painful comeuppance, was sent to a doctor instead of to jail.
"We, the jury, find the defendant, Lorena Lenore Bobbitt, not guilty of malicious wounding by reason of insanity."
A white South Carolina woman reported her children kidnapped by a black man and tearfully pleaded for their return on national TV. The next day,
"Susan Smith has been arrested and will be charged with 2 counts of murder in connection with the deaths of her children."
A white man who murdered his family then blamed that on blacks was himself murdered in prison late in the year. But the public focused more attention on the other man who was killed at the same time, the notorious killer Jeffrey Dahmer.
"We're conducting an investigation focusing on 8 people who were in the vicinity of the recreation building when the assault occurred."
For the second time, an abortionist was gunned down in Pensacola, Florida by a pro-life activist. Paul Hill called it justifiable homicide, but the court said otherwise.
"It is ordered in the judge that defendant Paul Jennings Hill is hereby sentenced to death."
A World Cup soccer player who cost his team a victory by kicking the ball into the wrong net was accosted and murdered back home in Colombia in 1994.
"The men came up to Andres Escobar in the parking lot of a restaurant at 3:30 in the morning, as if they'd already located him there, spotted him, and tracked him to this particular place."
The BBC's Tim Ross in Bogota.
seems there's a lot of money been put out on the World Cup, and that two different cartels, Medellin and Curley, were betting one on the Colombian team and the other against the Colombian team.
Figure skater Nancy Kerrigan was bashed on the knee in 1994.
There's about a 5 to 7 centimeter abrasion. There's local swelling over the kneecap.
Fellow skater Tonya Harding expressed sympathy and said she hoped if she didn't win an Olympic gold medal that Nancy did.
Nancy and I are teammates, and if I make mistakes and she can go out and she do a clean program, you know, and win, hey, that's great for her.
Prosecutors named fellow skater Tonya Harding as an unindicted co-conspirator when her ex-husband and bodyguard were charged in the kneecapping plot. Tennis star Monica Seles dropped out of the game after she was stabbed in the back at a tournament.
All I just felt was like, ooh, something in my back, you know, and then I just saw blood coming out, and I mean, then I turned back and I just saw a guy with a knife.
There was no World Series in 1994. Owners demanded the right to cap salaries and fire players for any reason at any time. Players responded by throwing themselves out of the game.
Two sides made up of greedy millionaires.
Tony Garrett founded a movement to boycott the last games before the walkout began.
To send a strong message that we are very distressed, the fans, that is.
Someone else accused of greed in 1994 was longtime House Ways and Means Chairman Dan Rostenkowski.
We're dealing with conduct that is very reprehensible.
Prosecutor Eric Holder.
Congressman Rostenkowski engaged in a pattern of corrupt activity for more than 20 years and embezzled hundreds of thousands of taxpayers' dollars to enrich himself, his family, and his friends.
Rostenkowski rejected a plea bargain and ran for re-election as if nothing had happened. When he lost to a political novice, his concession speech was one of the bitterest in memory.
I wish him luck during the difficult days ahead, and I certainly recognize that they are going to be difficult.
The Iran-Contra probe closed with the prosecutor stating flatly that President Reagan was in on it. The year also saw the arrest of Aldridge Ames as a Russian mole. CIA Director James Woolsey said Ames blew countless operations and caused agents to die.
This is an extremely serious case.
A serious earthquake hit Southern California.
Magnitude was 6.6 on the Richter scale. The location is about 20 miles southwest of San Fernando.
Yeah, I got that same effect, man. The roll and thing, I said, this is the big one.
Part of a main superhighway fell down in the quake.
And just thank God that we're all here.
A major quake in Bolivia set off mudslides.
The problem has been complicated by an earthen dam that broke.
Pneumonic plague struck India. A Baltic ferry sank, killing 1,000. A Siberian plane crash killed 121. One in China killed 160. U.S. Air had a commuter flight crash in North Carolina in July.
When I got there, it was on fire. The whole road was on fire. The plane was on fire. And there weren't many people there.
And another outside of Pittsburgh in September.
The aircraft had indeed crashed. There are no survivors.
American Airlines commuter subsidiary American Eagle also had two crashes.
It just went down like on a 45-degree angle, and I seen a bunch of smoke, steam, or something.
The train tunnel beneath the English Channel opened in 1994, connecting Britain with Europe for the first time since the Ice Age. The Channel Tunnel, or Channel, had a wreck on one of its first ceremonial runs. From UPI, this is the Year in Review. And now the obits. William Levitt died in 1994. He was the developer of Levittown that led to the look of today's suburbias. So did chemist Linus Pauling and teleprompter founder Irving Kahn and radar co-developer Lee Alvin DeBridge. Novelist Ralph Ellison died, and Randy Stiltz, who wrote the book about AIDS. Tennis great Vitas Gerulaitis died at 40 from carbon monoxide fumes, an accident rather than a suicide. Three of the most important Washington figures in recent history died in 1994.
I, Richard Billhouse Nixon, do solemnly swear.
Richard Nixon was the only president ever to leave office before the end of his term because of scandal.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Nixon would have enjoyed seeing the year's Republican election sweep. This man would not have.
I began my public life in 1936 on the slogan of work and wages.
Longtime Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, died in January.
I remain convinced that our greatest goal is to give the average American the opportunity to earn an income.
Former First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis died of cancer.
You're not going to like that one little bit when you find out it means that your working man expects something as his right, not as your gift.
This sounds political, but isn't. It's Joseph Cotton from the movie Citizen Kane. He died in 1994. So did Burt Lancaster and Cesar Romero and Telly Savalas and Claude Akins and Cameron Mitchell and George Peppard and William Conrad. The star of Jake and the Fat Man was also the voice of an original radio western.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke.
Radio's Henry Aldridge, Ezra Stone, died in 1994. The actress Jessica Tandy died, and we lost Dinah Shore and Betty Furness and Melina Mercury. The star of Never on Sunday died on a Sunday in March. John Candy was only 43 when he died the same month while filming a movie in Mexico. Raul Julia died at 54. Hollywood composer Henry Mancini died. This was his Mr. Lucky. He also did Peter Gunn and the Pink Panther theme and The Days of Wine and Roses. Jules Stein died. He wrote Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend and the songs from Funny Girl. The jazz world lost Cab Calloway and Shorty Rogers and Sonny Chirac. And jazz singer Carmen McRae died in 1994.
You're talking so sweet, well, you need me. You say you won't cheat, well, you need me. You're tapping your feet, well, you need me. It's over now, it's over now.
The Seattle rock star Kurt Cobain, the heart of the band Nirvana, committed suicide at the age of 28. David Crosby, senior partner of Crosby, Stills & Nash, needed a liver transplant to make it through 1994.
Just the other day.
When the first piece hit, we were waiting to see if anything would be detected.
A little comet slapped a big planet in the face in 1994. What a show, according to astronomer David Levy.
And someone came down and they saw a plume coming from that first fragment going up 1,000 miles out of Jupiter's atmosphere. We just flipped.
1994 was also the year astronomers got to look through the snapshots taken by the newly repaired orbiting telescope. Senator Barbara Mikulski.
I'm happy to announce the trouble with Hubble is over.
Computers corrected for warps in Hubble's main mirror. Result?
The pictures are remarkable.
The pictures showed there's probably a lot less really dense matter in space than astronomers figured. That means all their best theories about how the universe is put together are probably wrong. Some closing notes from the year just ended. Heather Whitestone of Alabama became the first deaf Miss America. Jack Nicholson bashed a car with a golf club. Michael Jackson paid millions to settle a pederasty suit, then married Lisa Marie Presley. Pundit said if Elvis lived, he was surely dead now. And that's the year in review. This program would not have been possible without the dedicated work of UPI correspondents and editors in 93 countries around the globe. UPI's managing editors are Tobin Beck and Bob Martin, and the executive editor is Raphael Callis. The vice president for operations is Peter Leach, the chief executive officer, Brewster Jackson. At the UPI Radio Network, the news director is Ron Colbert. Special assistance has been provided by Dennis Daly, musical advisor Virginia Lena-Alla. Our thanks to Bill Small, Pye Chamberlain, Carol Van Damme, Jay Saper, Pat Nason, Warren Corbett, Bill Clough, Greg Haber, Tom Gager, John Hofstetter, Shirley Smith, Craig Smith, Larry Webb, Don Folsom, John Megley, Rod Bauer, Jimmy Minicello, Megan Berry, Neil Augenstein, Martha Wilmoth, Bob Jones, Ivan Scott, Hank Nyer, and Penny Nelson Bartholomew. I'm Howard Dykus. Have a great 1995. This is the UPI Radio Network, a service of United Press International.